Today's daf from Masechet Pesachim brought to you from Yerushalayim. Ir HaKodesh is daf Chof Hey, and we got ourselves into a little bit of a pickle. It's sort of a tangential pickle, but the question was Basar B'Cholav, and the way in which we were learning out the Kal V'Chomer of Basar B'Cholav must definitely be Asar B'Anoah, because after all, an Isser was done with Basar B'Cholav, so if Orla is going to be Asar, so Kosher Kain Basar B'Cholav was certainly Asar, and that was the approach that we were taking with Isi Ben Yehuda. And the only reason we got into that was because of Abaye's assertion that there are two different things we need to take into consideration. Normally, we would say that wherever there's an Isser Achila, there's also an Isra Anah, in the same way that the Isra Achila is only Kederach Anah, so too is the Isra Anah only Kederach Anah. But Taina Abaye, when you're talking about something where it never says the word Achila, so then you don't have to worry about the Derech, because then even if it's not the Derech, there's no basis to say it would have to be Dafka, the Derech Anah to. So we were coming to ask on that, and we were asking on it from Isi Ben Yehuda's Raya from Orla. And he said, he himself went through the whole limud. He said, listen, Orla for sure is Asar B'Anoah, so for sure Basar B'Cholav should be Asar B'Anoah. Well, you did an Isser. So then he said, okay, but maybe not, because after all, Basar B'Cholav had a Shat HaKosher, whereas Orla never had a kosher, Shas HaKosher. And then we brought the Raya from Chometz B'Pesach. We said, Basar B'Cholav isn't Onush Kores. And we brought a Raya then from Kloya Kerem, which is not on the Shkars, it's still Asar B'Anoah. All of that was something of an aside, but why did we bring it? We brought it because if Abaye was right, then why didn't the Gemara say at that point, you can't prove anything from Kloya Kerem, because Abaye said Kloya Kerem was the main part where he's got this example of an Isser Hanoah that doesn't come from the word Achila at all. It's just over there, Pentugdash. And therefore, according to him, there would be a big difference. It's unique, you see. So to try to bring a raya to Basar B'Cholav from Orla, and to say, or if we started off from the treifa, that the kelev tishlechu noto, so if we're going to bring a raya from there, we should have answered, no, you can't bring a raya from there because there's something unique about Kaloya Kerem, at least according to Abaye. And the last thing that we learned that was Abaye said, what a silly question. Can't bring a raya from there to what? To Basar B'Cholav? Basar B'Cholav is also a place where it doesn't mention the word achila. So that's exactly what I was talking about. Learning out from Kloya Kerem, where it never mentions eating, and you're saying you have tzafilo shaloka derech hana'a, to Basar B'Cholav, where it never mentions eating, it just says three times, lo tevashogeti b'chalev imo, should be exactly the same thing. And therefore, it's a prayer. As a matter of fact, it's beautiful, says Abaye. The whole thing is absolutely gorgeous because we're learning out from the two locations where there would be no issue of it being dafke b'derech achila. So the last things that we learned, the last words we learned were like a third of the way down. Otu, b'basar b'cholav achila k'tiva bay. It's the same thing. As a matter of fact, ask the Gemara, it really is a silly question. Like, what was the Gemara asking? I mean, I don't know who it was, but whoever was asking this kasha to Abaye doesn't seem to be tuned in. Like, why were you asking that? How can we learn out for Basar B'Cholav? No, because he says, listen, the origins of the limud, remember, didn't start. Basar B'Cholav, we had to start somewhere, right? So where did we start? Ki am kadosh ata. And by treifa, it says anshe kodesh tiyumi. That's where we got the Isra Achila. So since by treifa, it does say that Basar B'Sada treifa lo tochelu, there it does say lo tochelu. So he thought that it would follow through the entire limud, would have to go all the way back to the beginning to treifa, and over there, it was a good question. How can you bring a raya from Kaloya Kerem? Okay, anyway, that sort of, the Gemara says it over here, he a little bit strangely, because it says Lohachi Kogomar Minavela. It isn't really Minavela. I mean, it's Betrefa. Rashi points out the language is a little bit weird. But I mean, that's what it means essentially. He brings Pshatim as to why we would call in this particular case Trefa Nevela, but again, he doesn't like them and they're inordinately complex for us right now. So Manavela Derchanata, which means trefa apas v'cholav derechanata. Whereas Abaye says, no, that's the whole point. Lo achilo katav achila begufa. That's why the Torah scrupulously avoids achila. That's the whole point. Did it ever bother you? How come the Torah just doesn't go right out and tell us not to eat pas v'cholav? Why do we have to learn out pas v'cholav all these strange ways? I mean, just come and tell me, don't eat pas v'cholav if you cook them up, right? Because that's the point. I don't want to tell you that. Because if I told you that, it would mean that it would only be usher derech achil or derech hana, and that's the whole point. It's usher even. If anything, that's the biggest riot to me. From the time you were a little kid, you were wondering why Abaye wasn't right, you see? Why doesn't it say don't eat basar v'cholav? Now you know, finally, after all these years, because I, Abaye, have finally made it clear. And that's exactly the whole point. So, the point is to tell me, shalokan alav afil shalokan derech hanato. But wait, wasn't there another question you could have asked? I mean, we said before that basar v'cholav is unique. We were talking about, before, we were talking about Orla. So we said, look, basar v'cholav never had a shas hakosher, right? And because I've always had a shas hakosher, whereas other Yisrim don't have a shas hakosher. So, I mean, why don't you say, how can you learn out from Kloy HaKerem? Kloy HaKerem, it becomes osur as soon as it starts to grow. And over here, the basar v'cholav may have spent many happy years as kosher food until you mix the two, right? So isn't that a reason to be more machmer on Kloy HaKerem? Omer of Adabar Ava, you know what this proves? This proves an amazing thing. And that is that actually Kloy HaKerem is something that becomes osur after it was mutter. And therefore, the idea over here is that it does have a shas hakosher. Meaning, imagine a situation like this. You had something that was growing, and it was growing not as kilayim. So it was perfectly kosher food. Now you made it kilayim by going in and planting something else in it, right? So now the question is, I understand that kilayim, as soon as it's mosif, one in 200, it becomes usr, because kilayim is only about to 1 in 200. But what becomes usr? Does the original growth become usr ex post facto when it was originally mutter? Or is it only that the new growth is usr, and now it became mixed with the old growth? So you see from here, from the fact that we don't consider kiloy hakerem to be something that actually never had a shas hakosher, but in fact it's something that does have a shas hakosher, exactly the same as basar v'cholav, we see from here that once something becomes kloy hakerem, it now retroactively affects the entire plant from beginning to end. That's the point, which is brilliant, because now we have this limud for basar v'cholav that ends up teaching us a tremendous amount of new issues across the board, including lagabi kloy hakerem. How do we view kloy hakerem? And therefore, it did have a kosher, shat hakosher. Ho vaitela and shat hakosher, kodem hashrasha. So before this new thing took root, it was mutter. And now it's growing as kilayim. Now the whole darn thing becomes usr. Moser Rav Shmaya, that's not true. Because take a look at this halacha that says exactly the opposite. It says over here, what would be if you would take a flower pot, right? And this flower pot, this is a Mishnah in kilayim. This flower pot has a hole on the bottom. Remember, whenever you have a flower pot with a hole, that's called an atzitz nakuv. What's the din of an atzitz nakuv? It is considered to be attached to the ground even when it's in midair, because it's considered to continue to be able to absorb nutrients through its roots by virtue of whatever is being exuded into the air and whatever minerals are coming out together with whatever water vapor is being released, it's picking up because it's got this hole by its roots. So if that's the case, take a look at this Mishnah. It's an amazing Mishnah. A guy's got a flower pot, and he's got whatever. He's got cabbage in the flower pot, right? And now he walks it through a vineyard. Now, this vineyard's a perfectly happy vineyard. Nobody's been bothering it. There's no kilayim in the vineyard. And this guy takes a stroll through the vineyard, and he never even puts the flower pot down on the ground. If he's there long enough that the amount of growth in the flower pot, let's say his cabbage plant, now if it grew one part out of 200, so then it's usr. Now, what does that mean? What do you mean, what part of 200? Why don't you say, well, It's growing, and since it's growing, it now affects the entire plant. I mean, when you're giving me the shear of 1 in 200, that is because of the din of bittul. New growth, which is usur, apparently, is the only growth that's usur, and therefore we apply to it the din of bittul. Let's say you would have some kelayim falling into a mixture. Nothing to do with growing. This stuff grew 3 years ago. Now we're mixing it into a cake. So if you put in more than a proportion of 1 to 200 of the kaloya karam into the cake, so now the entire cake becomes usur because there's isur in it, the same way with lard into it would be echad mishishim, if you put kaloya karam into it, if it's echad b'matayim, right? That's the only basis of using the shear of echad b'matayim. But that only makes sense if we're looking at the new growth as the isur, and that new growth has to usur by being mixed with all of the old growth. It's a totally irrelevant and meaningless number. 1 out of 200, what does that mean? If you're telling me that when something starts to grow as kaloya kerem, the whole thing becomes usur, including the original amount. So for God's sake, how can you claim to me that from this issue over here about why we don't ask, I mean, this is like such a side point. I mean, it's brilliant. Why don't we ask the kaloya kerem never had a shasa kosher? And you see from here, it did have a shasa kosher. The Mishnah says beferish that it does not become usur before. It never had a shasa kosher. It basically, either it's mutter or it's usur. If it was mutter l'chatchila, it remains mutter. Only the new growth is usur. What are you telling me? That it's the same thing as the Basar B'cholav. Oh, my Rava. That's because there happens to be two completely different dinim. This is an amazing thing that we learn out from the Pasuk. Two completely different dinim about Kaloya Kerem. That's the beauty of it. Because there's really, if you take a look at the Pasuk, there are two separate psukim and two separate words in the pasuk when you talk about the nature of the isur of kaloya kerem. Listen carefully to what it says. Lo tizra karmecha kilayim, pentikdash, now listen to this, pentikdash hamelea hazera asher tizra. What does that mean? Pentizra hamelea hazera. The zera is original zera, right? So what is the hamale'ah? The hamale'ah means the growth. But is it the zera, the original zera, or is it only the growth? I mean, make up your mind. Therefore, we need to understand that, in fact, the pasuk is mentioning two separate isurim. Something that was zarua, when it's referring to zera, so what it means is you have a plant that has not yet taken root. If it hasn't taken root, it's still considered to be in a state of zera. It's still a seed that is trying to take root. If it was zarua mi'ikaro, and then the moment it takes root, the entire thing becomes usur. That, yes, that is from initially, mi'ikaro, from the very beginning. But in this case, you had your cabbage, and your cabbage had been growing in this flower pot, and it took root in your backyard. Now you picked up the flower pot. You're trying to transport it to somewhere else. So you pick up your flower pot, and you walked through your vineyard with an already rooted cabbage. There it does not become usur, because it never was initially put into a state of kilayim. And so there the halacha is, if it's zarua uba, absolutely you're correct. The Mishnah is talking about that case. And over there the din is dafka hosif. Yes, if it added, so then the added stuff is isser, and now we have to see what the proportion of isser to non-isser is. If it's 1 in 200, or any larger proportion than that, so then it's going to be isser. But lo hosif lo, if it wasn't 1 in 200, it was less than that, so then it doesn't become isser at all. Nothing becomes isser. That's the point. So it's a completely different issue. But I still maintain that you do see from here that standard zriah of kilayim, the meaning of the kilayim, is that in fact it did have a shasa heter, and now by taking root, the whole thing, even what was previously mutter, becomes usur. Omer Rabbi Yaakov, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Once already we were talking about the issue of Rabbi Abo and Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Abo remembered, quoted Rabbi Yochanan to say that if you take something shelo kederech hana'ato, so then it's mutter in any of the locations where the Torah mentions the isur of achila, and there's a derivation of anah from achila. Rabbi Yaakov said something similar, also in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and he said that, look, the truth is that normally Derech Hanato does not include utilizing something to as a medication, because that's not the primary use of something. And we said before that we're talking about the way in which it's normally used. However, there's one very special case where you cannot make use of something even for medicine, and that is talking about chutz mi atzei asherah. So atzei asherah, that would be a tree that's actually worshipped of avodah zarah, or it's got avodah zarah underneath it and grew around whatever. But whatever, that's the din of avodah zarah. But whatever atzei asherah is usher in, you can't use it for anything, even in order to be merapeh yourself. Now, the question is, why not? I mean, are we talking about that there is danger to life here? Inemidi kasakanazi. If it's life-threatening, then I feel atzei asherah nami. What would be the iser in using the atzei asherah? Remember that the Torah says, v'chai behem. And from v'chai behem, we learn out, v'lo sheyamut behem. So any of the iserim of the Torah are meant to be applied only in cases where they will not endanger your life. If they're going to endanger your life, the Torah says, listen, I gave you this Torah to live with, not to die with. So because of that, there should be no problem in utilizing any Surayan. I'm assuming that's why you said you're allowed to use Kaloya Karam or whatever, right? I mean, you're saying it's a danger, so use it. Okay. If it's not a danger, so then how did you use it for other? I mean, forget about Atzei Asherah. You shouldn't be able to use anything at all, because what's the heter to use Isser if it isn't dangerous? No, says the Gemara. What do you mean? You know the answer to that. We're talking about over here that it is dangerous. It's dangerous to your life, yes. But the point over here is that the other things you can use, but even where it's dangerous to your survival, you cannot use Avodah Zarah. Why is that? Because even though it says V'chai Bahem, there is one place where the Torah says you cannot view your life as more important than the mitzvahs of the Torah. And where is that? Where it's Nogea Ahavat Hashem. V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol miyodecha. So the idea over there is, the Tanya Rebbe Eliezer Omer, what is the meaning of b'chol nafshecha v'chol miyodecha? Lama ne'emar b'chol nafshecha. I mean, if it says you got to give your life, why does it say all of your money? And if it says all your money, so it seems to mean your money and not your life. So which one is it? Well, it depends who you're talking to. If you've got a guy who views his life as more important to him than his money, so then his big sacrifice would be to give up his life. We're saying, look, you have to be willing to do that. B'chol nafshecha. Then there's people that risk their lives all the time to make a little bit of extra money. You may think they're crazy, but they think this is what life is all about. So for him, the greater sacrifice is to lose his money. What am I living for if I can't make money? I'm going to give away all my money. So for such a person, so from here we see that v'chai b'hem specifically is contraindicated by the din of the Ahavtat Hashem Elokecha. So since utilizing an asherah would be a pegam in this avas Hashem, because it's showing the chashivas for avodah zarah, so because of that, you need to give up your life instead of doing something that gives any kind of mamashas to an avodah zarah, and therefore you can't use it. Now, there's a big machlokas over here, what exactly that means. I mean, does it mean, as Tosis understands over here, that it's only because the single thing that will help me be cured is this atzei asherah? So over there, we're worried. Okay, so then, I mean, people may assume that the reason this atzei asherah is so powerful to cure you is because it has relation to the avodah zarah. Then it becomes insulting, ki'ilu, to the presence of the Shekhinah. But I mean, if it's just like another piece of wood, and any kind of wood would help, and this is the wood that you've got, so in what way would this be Nogea v'ahavtat Hashem Elokecha? There's nothing. It just happens to be another kind of piece of wood. I mean, you shouldn't be involved in any kind of involvement of the ahavta. However, this is a big machlokas rishonim, and since the Maaseh Torah says lo yidbak piyotcha mam u'uma min acher, You're not allowed to have any connection at all to Avodah Zarah. This is included, even though it's not in a direct V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, but it's Avizrayu of Avodah Zarah, in which all things, me'uma, anything at all that's connected to Avodah Zarah, is considered to be a direct chibur to Avodah Zarah. Okay, it's not our sugya right now, but just to be aware of the fact that it's not Atzei Asherah ipso facto Yitzro Hashem, depends on, perhaps, according to Tosis, on the case. Anyway, so that's why it says that. So it turns out, listen, it's much more complicated than it sounds, because it turns out, and you need to understand this, because what it sounds like is that it's only because of v'chai b'hem that you are allowed to be over on any iser. But that's not true. I'll show you why it's not true. It's not true because, look, if let's say a goy, does a goy have a mitzvah of v'chai b'hem? Of course not. So suppose a goy has a gun to his head, and the question is whether he is supposed to give up his life, right? So he's being told to eat Eiver Min HaChai. So is there a mitzvah of v'chai b'hem on eating, on his being over Eiver Min HaChai? No. So then he should give up his life and not eat Eiver Min HaChai, right? In other words, your starting position was, what in the world would give you the heter to be allowed to do any iser? Why are we talking about Avodah Zarah? Any iser. The Torah said not to do it. So you're saying, I decided it's more important that I should live. Who are you to decide it's important that you should live? So therefore, I'm asking you, there's obviously a complicating factor over here. Because if the only reason that we said that you're supposed to take your life more seriously than the mitzvah of the Torah is v'chai b'hem, so then a goy who does not have v'chai b'hem would not have that mitzvah, and therefore would have to give up his life, right? So then, is that true? Well, the halacha actually is that in the event that somebody puts a gun to a goy's head, there is absolutely no chiyuv for him to give up his life. Now, why is that? Well, says the Rambam, because it doesn't say ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha for a goy. So why should he give up his life? What? I thought the Gemara started off with the opposite assumption. So here's where it's very important to recognize the level of responsibility. There are two completely different levels of responsibility. What would be the din if somebody told you, do not worship Avodah Zarah to save your life, and even though it's going to save your life by virtue of its curative powers, and the only way to worship this Avodah Zarah is to drink the magic potion, which happens to be medicinally effective, and you want to go out and drink that Avodah Zarah, and somebody says, listen, if you drink that Avodah Zarah, you're going to be Chayav Misa. And you go ahead and you drink that Avodah Zarah. Are you Chayav Misa or not?
Yes,
you are Chayav Misa. Now, let's take another case. The guy, in this case, has a gun to your head and says to you, either you're going to worship this Avodah Zarah or I am shooting you. And somebody says to you, don't worship that Avodah Zarah, you're going to be Chayav Misa if you do. And you go ahead and you worship Avodah Zarah. Are you Chayav Misa? No, correct. You are not Chayav Misa. Why not? Because this is the whole point. In order to be Chayav Misa, you have to be making the choice, not the choice being made for you. You see the subtlety of the issue? If you're making the choice of saving your life through drinking this Avodah Zarah stuff, that's entirely your business. So there it becomes a question of, am I being over the Yisra of Avodah Zarah or not? If I am, so I'm Chayav. The fact that the Torah said, you don't have an excuse just because you are going to die, doesn't change anything. So therefore, I'm Chayav. How about in that case, the where there is no chiyuv at all of the v'chai b'hem? Here's where we get into the issue. So v'chai b'hem v'lo she'amut b'hem is what allows me even to make choices. If I don't have the application of v'chai b'hem, it's the onus that means it's not my act. When my will is taken over by the other, that is called onus, and onus rachmana patre. The Torah patters you from onus. And by the way, the literal sense of onus, which is rape, is so beautifully brought out the interrelationship between the physical element of rape and the mental element of rape, because that's the halacha, that if someone in fact rapes a woman and then the cops come and they try to grab the guy and pull him off of her and she says, no, I'm having a great time, please leave him. The truth is she's still putter. Why? Because he's already taken over her mind. That's the point. There comes a point at which it's irresistible. That's considered to be ones rachmana patre, even though it's a mental phenomenon. So the idea over here is once your mind is taken away from you, then if a guy's got a gun to your head, he is the one that is defining what needs to be done, not you. Okay, anyway, that is, so it's a bit more complex than it looks, and we'll see, we're going to get into some more of the dinim now that apply in cases where we don't have the mitzvah v'haftas Hashem Elokecha, and nonetheless v'chai behem doesn't apply for another reason. Okay, and I'll give you a hint. Somebody says, either you shoot A or I shoot you. Okay, it doesn't say v'haftas Hashem Elokecha not to kill someone else, so I'll go shoot the other guy, right? So that is the question. Does v'chai behem apply in that case? Because then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, hold on 1 second. I didn't say you should live. I said you, plural, should live. All of you are supposed to live. I mean, what makes you think I want you to live more than the other guy to live? You're making that decision. So if somebody's going to get killed. It's either you or the other guy. You can't use v'chai, but listen, God told me I got to survive. I'm really sorry about this. It's hurting me more than it hurts you. You can't do that. Okay, so that would be just a svara, would have nothing to do with the pasuk, right? Because you can't apply v'chai behem. All right, so those are the kind of issues that we're going to have to be talking about. And ki asa ravin am Rabbi Yochanan, this is now the fourth maimer that we've had in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. So here he's saying you're allowed to use anything at all for medicine, that's yisurei anah, except for aveda zora. And now he adds gilui arayot and shvichut dami. So now there is no way for you to actually save yourself through being over on Gilui Arayos or through killing somebody. Now this would mean even in a case where your brain has been removed, so to speak. So this is an onus, right? So somebody is basically has a gun to your head. So Avodah Zarah, okay. V'ahavtat Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha. Gilui Arayos v'shvichas damim. Where do we know that from? It doesn't say anything about v'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha when it comes to that. Says Rebbe, because look, we have this amazing pasuk. Pasuk over here is talking about somebody who's raping a nara hamurasa. And it says, l'nara lo ta'aseh davar. The nara, it's not her fault, because it says she's an anusa. And it says, ki ka'asher yakum ish arayehu, u'etzocho nefesh. Nefesh, really, it says, kena davar hazeh. That, look, this is basically exactly the same as a person coming over to somebody and murdering him. So this guy raped her. Are you going to blame someone for being the victim of a murder? So you can't blame her for being the victim of a rape. Now, I mean, that's ridiculous. What do I have to start comparing it to murder? I mean, why is that important? No, look, it looks like it was coming to give you insight into the nature of the Nara Murasa. But in fact, it also teaches you something about the murder as well. And what it's doing is, it's saying, Ritzicha, murder, and this case of the rape of a Nara Murasa, are interrelated. Ma Nara Murasa, nitan hatzila benafsho. Are you allowed to kill the guy who is the rapist? Well, it says, now remember, we are not talking about a normal case of rape over here of an unmarried girl, right? We're talking about a rapist of a Nara Murasa. It's a big question of how far Gilui Arayos extends over here in this din. Does it include even Isurei Derabanan? Is it only Isurei Erva that are Isurei Kores or Chiyuvei Misa and so on and so forth? Okay, this is a question. But right now, the Pasuk is talking about, I want to save this girl. And the only way I can save her is by shooting the rapist. So the Torah says that Tzakaha Nara Murasa v'ein Moshiela. She shouted and she screamed and nobody saved her. Mashma, that you are supposed to save her. Okay, so you see from there that you're allowed to shoot the rapist in order to save her. So afrotseach, this means that you can also shoot a murderer in order to save the victim. Rotzeach ditamat silo benafsho. Okay, so that I learn out. Well, I don't say, well, listen, I mean, what do you care? Either A is going to be killed by you, or B is going to be killed by A, because he's a murderer. So don't get involved, right? No. So that is what I learned from the pasuk. This is the same as murder. So surprisingly, what was meant to be something that taught me something ends up being that which I was learning too. Okay, but it also does teach me. And it teaches me the following. The nara murasa is the same as a rotseach. So just as a rotseach, we know, and we'll talk about how we know in a minute, but we know that he has to allow himself to be killed if a guy is threatening him, and don't do the iser, af na'araha murasa te'hareg v'al tavor. Now there's a big question about this word te'hareg. Te'hareg is feminine. And what it seems to be saying is that the na'araha murasa should allow the guy to kill her and not be over. Now, that is simply not true. Because the din of the Nara Murasa is that she does not have to give up her life not to be raped for a very simple reason. She's completely passive. What's in her business what he does to her body? So if he's going to rape her, why should she have to give up her life to stop him? And therefore, it must say over here, Af Nara Murasa Yeharek, that the male should allow himself to be killed and not to be over. Now, the question over here is, I'll tell you why that's not so partial. Because the case that we gave is allowing yourself to be saved by Yisurei Hanoah, not by a gun to your head, right? So in the case of Yisurei Hanoah, so what are we saying over there? That the halacha would be that you would not be allowed to save yourself with the case of the Na'araha Murasa. And then we're comparing it to the case where somebody, learning it out from Na'araha Murasa, where somebody is going to shoot you if you don't rape her. There's a big problem with that, that the Gemara says. If somebody shoots you, as opposed to you're following his instructions, it's never considered to be that he took over your mind. That's the problem. Because if you're dealing with the male, he has to get an erection in order to be able to rape her. And since that's your business, he can't get you an erection by putting a gun to your head, right? So that, the Gemara says, is always considered to be kishui is midato. That's his own response to what it is that's happening. So if the guy wants to turn himself on with a gun to his head, that's his problem. It's not your problem. In which case, the entire application of this being an onus really would only apply to the woman. In which case, Tosfos says, indeed, the way that we could understand the Tehareg would be where she's got a gun to her head and that she has to be active. It's not enough. It's not that she's going to allow him to rape her. He's insisting on her doing actual things that are going to be answers. So she has to do insertion or whatever. So there, it's fact, it should say Tehareg, which is what it says. That's how Tosfos understands the Gerasa. So again, it's complex, the sugya, because it involves two completely different levels of choice, one onus and one choosing what the refuah is going to be, or whatever other cases are. Usually it's in terms of refuah, where it's your own choice. And also because it may involve differences when it comes to inyonim of erva, it may involve differences between men and women. All right, so now we just made an assumption. Our assumption was, look, it's obvious that when it comes to murder, you're going to have to give up your life. Why is that so obvious? Shvichas damim gufe minolan, how do we know that? That, says the Gemara, is obvious. It's a svara. Look, I mean, there was a mice of this guy who comes to Rava. Rava was the Rosh Hashiva, and asks him, what do I do? Mori d'roroi amarli zil katli leplanya v'ilo katil nalakha. Look, either you're going to take care of my political enemy over here and knock him off, or I'm going to shoot you. So make up your mind. What do I do? So Rava said to him, you have no choice. You have to let him kill you. Liktoluch velo tiktol. You cannot kill anybody because mar chazit damadi dach sumak tvei, dilma damadahu gavar sumak tvei. Remember, this is not just a philosophical question. How do you know your blood is redder than the other guy? That's not the point. I mean, so what does that mean? That's irrelevant. The point over here is benogei avachai bahem. That's the point. Since the reason that you're not supposed to give up your life for a mitzvah is only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you that your life is more important than the mitzvah, if you would assume that in this case you would be saying, well, look, I mean, over here, somebody's life is going to be lost. It's obvious that my life is more important. You're making that decision for God? How do you know? That's what Summa Ktvei means in terms of the question of existence or non-existence. I mean, what standards are you applying? Red blood? So, I mean, how do you know what is considered to be red or blood as far as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned? Therefore, you can't apply V'chai B'hem. And if you can't apply V'chai B'hem, then you're left with the Isser. That's the point. Okay, so since that's the case, you're not allowed to kill him. If Lamaisa, the guy, had killed him with the gun to his head, he would have been Potter because it's not considered to be his Ratzon. He's still an Ones. That's a completely different thing. Ones Rachmana Patre means the Torah was not B'chai of you in Onesh. That's something else. Okay, Mar Bar Ravina once bumps into Ravina. Ravina is sitting there. He's got his little child. His little girl is sick. She's got a fever. And he's rubbing her down with oil that he's getting from Guharke de Arla. So he took these immature olives, and he's rubbing them against her body, and that makes them exude oil on her, and that is helping her fever. So Mar Bar Rav Ashi said to him, wait a minute, you're only allowed to use Isra Anah if it's Bishata Sakana. I mean, didn't say you can just use it for anything that was an act of refuah. So Ravina said, well, this is a sakana. High ishtat mirata, these types of high fevers that she has, is considered to be a sakana. And mamela, there is no problem because it's no different than having any of the other dangers. But some say it was not actually a sakana. And what Ravina said to Mar Bar Rav Ashi is that I'm going aliba de Rabbi Yochanan. Is this the normal way that's called derech hana'ah? To take these unripe olives and to use them by rubbing over a body? Don't be ridiculous. This is not derech hana'ah, Kavina. And since I'm not using it as a derech hana'ah, there's no iser bichlal. I don't have to worry about whether it's a sakana. That's not the point. Itmar. And this raises another issue. The other issue is where you are completely passive, in the sense that the hana'a that you're getting is not what you went out to get on your own. So let's talk about a case of hana'a ha-ba'alo la'adam ba'al kocho. Something is happening to you, which is not your choice, but is just going to happen because of what you're doing. For instance, you're on the road, and this road inevitably passes by a church where they constantly bring this k'teres to Avodah Zarah that makes this wonderful smell, and everybody that walks by has no choice but to smell the Isser Hanah to the Avodah Zarah. So, I mean, I have no interest in that smell. I need to simply travel along the road. But, I mean, I am going to end up smelling it or not. So what would be the din over there? Abaya says, you don't have any problem. You don't have to avoid it. And as long as you didn't go out to smell it, it's not your problem. Whereas Rava Amar Asura, Rava says, even if it's not what you went out to get, you have to go out of your way and not use this road. Now, there are completely different situations. We're going to have to examine the four different possibilities that the Machlokas of Abaya Rava are referring to. And you see how this is the natural outgrowth of the issues of your choice versus your being an ones. So over here, this would be the possibilities. It could be that you would be able to find an alternative route without undue tircha. It could be that you can't. It could be that once you're there, you go, wow, does that smell good? And you actually want to take the smell. And it could be that you have no interest in this smell whatsoever. So put those two factors together, and you come up with four possibilities. Now, let's talk about what the machlokas in which of the four possibilities Abaya v'Rava would be chaylik. If you could avoid the street, you could go on another road, Efsher. And Tosfos said when we say Efsher, we're talking about where it's not it's not Efsher, meaning the theoretical possibility. I mean, it's a practical possibility. Obviously, I can go all the way around the earth and come around the other side. I mean, what we're talking about over here is where it's of relative the same type of issue. I happen to want to take this highway. I could take another highway. So where I could have avoided it, and I also want to go this way because I love that smell, or even where it's not possible to find a similar route, but I want to have the smell, okay? In that case, both Abaye and Rava are meida, that for sure it's usher, because you are mechaven to be nene from the Avodah Zarah. But suppose you don't have a feasible, it's possible, but it's not a feasible alternative, and you have no intention to want to go that way in order to smell it. There's no way to avoid it. So over there, Abaye and Rava also both agree that it would be mutter. The only machlokas that they have is where you are not mechaven, but you have an alternative. Now, that obviously leads to the famous machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, right? What is the din of a dover she'eno mitkaven? Which is what's happening over here. You are not mechaven to be nene, but you are going to end up being nene. So what's the halach? So therefore, aliba de Rabbi Yehuda dover she'eno mitkaven is osur. If we go according to Rabbi Yehuda, he holds it's osur even if you're not mechaven. Okay, so then Abaye v'Rava agree. Well, of course, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be osur because there's no way for me to avoid smelling that smell. The machlokas over here between Abaye v'Rava is going aliba to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is the one who says that dover she'eno miskavin is mutter, and therefore Abaye says, okay, that's what I said. I said it's mutter. Rava says, no, even in that case, if you're going like Rabbi Shimon would agree that it's osur. Because when did Rabbi Shimon say that something was mutter? Only where there's no alternative. But where there is an alternative, he never said that it's mutter. Now, this would be, it's amazing that we finally get over here to a fundamental machlokas about how to understand Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda. When Rabbi Shimon said in his famous original mimer, Gorer Adam Mitav Kiseves Avsal, on Shabbos, that you're allowed to drag the table across the floor, despite the fact that it may make a hole, a furrow in the floor, and that you'd be over on Binyan, or outside you'd be over on Harish, or whatever, right? So according to that, it would seem that this follows, but not necessarily. Is Rabbi Shimon talking about a table or a kisei that you could just as easily lift and carry? And he's saying, even though you have an alternative, it doesn't matter. Just drag it across the floor because it's not important, because it's einu mechaven. Or does he say, if you have an alternative, then you can't do it? So Rava is claiming a fundamental new understanding in Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon didn't say it's mutter because it's miskaven. Rabbi Shimon said in the event that it's not feasible, it's very heavy, I'd have to get somebody else to help me to carry it, whatever, then it's mutter. But in a case where it's feasible, echad efsher, where did Rabbi Shimon ever say that? According to Abaye, Rabbi Shimon never took into consideration about how convenient it was to drag it. Even if it's a chair, just drag the chair across the floor. He said, well, what do you got to drag it for? You could pick it up. I feel like dragging it. What's the difference? So that would be the machlokas over here between Abaye and Rava, which is quite amazing. Now, there's another tremendously important issue over here, and that is the question about psik resha. I mean, how come we're ignoring that? Is it a psik resha? Meaning, if you're going to be walking by there, you're definitely going to be inhaling this? So then it's usher, even according to Rabbi Shimon, because it's a psik resha. How come we're ignoring that? So because of that, Tosfos has to say, well, obviously all of these cases are not psik reshas. However, there is a brilliant, truly brilliant and insightful insight by the Ran about the sugya that is just like really awesome. The Ran points out like this, what does psik resha essentially mean? Psik resha means that when you have a result which is unintended but unavoidable, then what we're saying is that result is innate in the thing that you're doing, correct? But over here, there's no result. There's no mechanical result. A psikresha can only apply to a mechanical result. You drag the chair. The chair inevitably makes a hole in the ground. I can therefore trace through physics the impact of the chair, the friction, and so on, and say, well, you made this hole, right? What we're talking about over here has nothing to do with any type of mechanical act. It has to do with the question of whether you're enjoying a smell. How can enjoying a smell make a difference to a psikresha, for God's sake, says the Ron. That's brilliant. What are you going to see that there's now a difference in the act? Because now the act is built into enjoyment. That's nonsense. So therefore, psikresha, what do you think? Psikresha is just some question, some moralistic issue. Well, it could have been a well, that's not the point. It's not what I did. That's all. You can't do ahana. Isn't that wonderful? It just like changes the whole thing, right? That's great. Okay, anyway, this is one approach to the Machlokas Abayah V'Rava in the way we understand Reb Shemna and Reb Yehuda. Now, there's an alternative, which is also a mind-boggling alternative. It's so surprising. It's Amish. It's like the last thing you would have thought about the Machlokas Reb Shemna and Reb Yehuda. Dig this, okay? Igeni Amri. So the other lashon is that actually the Machlokas is exactly the opposite. It goes like this. In the event where you could have taken a different route, but you do not have any intent to smell this stuff. It's just not on your agenda at all. Okay, so that's where we have a machlokas of Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Shimon, because basically, I mean, the first way we understood it was the normal way. Rava says, Rebbe Shimon answers something if there was an alternative. He's only matter if there's no alternative. Now we're saying, no, that's not true. Rava agrees 100%. Rebbe Shimon is going to be matter it even if you can avoid it, okay? And that, as a matter of fact, is exactly what Rebbe Yehuda is saying you can't do. Rebbe Yehuda was saying that you cannot do that, and that's the whole point that he's making. And where then is the machlokas? The machlokas is where there's no way for you to choose another road, and you still have no kavana. So in that case, that also everybody is meida, that it's mutter. That's completely mutter. That is everybody, both Abaye and Rava, agree that it would be mutter. Because even though Reb Yehuda, normally he says it's usser, he only says that where there is a choice. But if there's no choice, so that would mean, according to this approach, Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon are only arguing about a chair that you could carry. But Reb Yehuda was made it that you could drag it if it was too heavy to carry. This is almost the opposite. So where is the machlokas? The machlokas is where it's unavoidable, but you want to enjoy it. Listen to the opposites over here. Therefore, according to Rebbe Shimon, remember that Rebbe Shimon's primary concern that defines whether something is mutter or usser is his kavana. And since, according to Rebbe Shimon, the azil basar kavana, the important thing in life is kavana. So then Abaye and Rava agree that, of course, Rabbi Shimon would say it's usher because you want to have kavana from the Avodah Zarah. The machlokas between Abaye and Rava would be according to Rabbi Yehuda, because since Rabbi Yehuda seems not to care about what your kavana is, but only on whether it's avoidable, so because of that, we have over there, since he said, I don't care if you're mechavin or not, lo shalom mechavin, lo shalom mitkavin, the only thing that is a factor is whether it was avoidable or not. So if it's efshar usher, so Abaye says, okay, so I agree with Rebbe Yehuda. I'm telling you what Rebbe Yehuda says. He does not consider kavana to be a factor in the decision of whether it's mutter or usher. So according to him, what's the difference if you're mechavin? It's only Rebbe Shimon who says it makes a big difference if you're mechavin. You imagine? Exactly the opposite of everything you thought. Whereas Rava says, look, you don't have a right to go that far. I mean, ad kan lo karma, Rebbe Yehuda she'enu miskavin ki miskavin, elo l'chumra. What did Rebbe Yehuda say? Rebbe Yehuda only said you cannot get out of the iser by saying that there's no kavana. That's a chumra. Does that mean he doesn't view kavana as being a factor in iser at all? Absolutely not. Where do you see that? Did he ever say a mitkaven is exactly the same as an eno mitkaven? Even lekula? That you, Abaye, should go ahead and should claim that alibet Rebbe Yehuda, the fact that he is being mechaven liyisr is irrelevant, since anyway it was low efshar? I consider that to be outrageous.